I'm Angela Kenneke. This is a tough time of year for me. I survived another Mother's Day. The last day I saw my daughter Emily alive was on Mother's Day of 2018. The four-year anniversary of Emily's death is also approaching. Somehow, like many of you listening, I make it through these hard days. There are also still bright spots, like my interview with TikTok phenom Faith Hill. Now I know what you're thinking. The country music star? No, this is the other Faith Hill, the one from Missouri, who started using meth at age 14.
I graduated the DARE program. I got the Golden Essay Award. I got a plaque. I got everything, you know? And I still, it still wasn't enough.
Because of her years of meth use, Faith lost all of her teeth and courageously showed videos revealing her dentures on social media.
I put that on there and shared my journey, and then it just got really crazy feedback, and it was just kind of blew up, and I was like, do people like this? And I just kind of really rolled with it.
Faith's handle on TikTok is I Am Toothless and Ruthless, and she has nearly 2 million followers to date. Now, I didn't find her ruthless at all, though. Her life experience has made this 23-year-old wise beyond her years. So, Faith, the first thing that I have to ask you about is your name. Obviously, we all know about another Faith Hill. Everyone may not know you. They will after this podcast, right? But tell me about being named Faith Hill.
Funny story, actually. It was an accident. It wasn't even... My mom had no idea. My mom and my dad were actually arguing about what they were going to name me. One of them wanted to name me Desiree, and the other one wanted to name me Jasmine. And my great-grandma at the time, while I was being born, said, well, why don't you just give her Faith as a first name? Because I'm thinking that was supposed to be my middle name. And my dad's last name is already Hill, and I have my mom's middle name, so just Faith Hill. And then the first time my mom ever really realized what, happened, we were in the grocery store and someone commented how cute I was, little chubby baby, and asked what my name was. And my mom was like, well, Faith Hill. And the lady was just like, oh my gosh, that's my favorite country singer. My mom was just like, what? What do you mean?
Oh my goodness. Yeah, so it's something you kind of carry around with you all the time. I bet people make comments and that kind of thing.
Oh, if I had a dollar for every time, yeah. I would be so rich. All throughout school, whenever I was young, my teachers would be like, how's Tim McGraw doing today? And I'm like, because I was really young at the time. Of course, I know who it is now, but at the time, I was like, who? What?
I think there's room for two Faith Hills in the world. So anyway.
It better be.
Well, let's dive right in to talking about your meth addiction and your first use of meth. You were only 23 years old, but you struggled with meth use for 6 years?
Yeah. I was roughly 14 and 15 years of age when I first started heavily getting into it. And it's not like I went, straight to meth. I'd grown up around a lot of drug usage, a lot of abuse in all forms and aspects growing up. And it was all surrounded, I was surrounded by it. And I was such a stickler. I told myself, I'm never going to do drugs. I don't want to be like this. I graduated the DARE program. I got the Golden Essay Award. I got a plaque. I got everything, And I still, it still wasn't enough. And I found myself feeling like I didn't fit in, didn't know where I belonged. And then I started smoking weed and drinking. And then the next thing I knew, that wasn't enough for me. And I knew I needed more. And I would forever be chasing that high that I got the first time for 6 years. I just wanted it and I could never get it again.
Your story is so familiar to me. First of all, my daughter Emily was the star pupil in DARE as well. She read her essay. And yet went on eventually, to use heroin, but it started with weed. I think a lot of kids start with that and or alcohol, all of the above. Yeah. What was it? You talk about chasing that high, and I've heard a lot of people say that. What was it about meth being your drug of choice?
It's weird. It just made me alert, I feel like. And I know that's my addict brain rationalizing why I wanted to keep using it. But when I first used it, I just had this rush and I felt confident, overstimulated. And I was just like, whoa, man, like this is what I want forever. Like I want to feel like this forever. Well, little did I know, I was never going to feel like that again. The first, it's one and done, and it's just downhill from there constantly.
Well, the one thing you mentioned about, growing up where there were drugs around and abuse, adverse childhood experiences really do contribute, especially if you're genetically predispositioned anyway, to suffering from substance use disorder.
I both got that from my mom and my dad. Double whammy for me.
I'm sorry. So talk a little bit about when you were in active addiction. You're 14, 15 when you first start. Did you graduate from high school? I mean, what was it like for you?
It's almost strange to say now that when I was in it, especially that early on, it soon became very familiar to me. Like I thought, this is normal. This is what everybody goes through because I had only known my part of life. I only knew what I knew. I didn't get to experience other parts of life yet. I didn't get to, I really secluded myself after getting into hard drugs. And I remember my mom sending me to rehab. She had no idea what to do with me. I went to rehab. I dropped out of school after rehab. Rehab's supposed to really get you right, but it only does if you want to get right. I wasn't ready to get sober. I didn't want to get sober. I was young. I was like, I'm gonna live my life up. F school. I found a whole bunch of new using buddies in rehab, as bad as that sounds. And I just kept ripping and running. I thought I had it all figured out. I had all the answers, Growing up, seeing what I knew I didn't want, I was like, oh, well, I can do it different. I can do it better. Well, I can't. You can't. You just can't.
That's interesting to me. What your brain also tells you, of course, that this substance becomes the most important thing in your life.
Yeah. No matter how much I thought I loved my family and the people I cared about, I just couldn't shake it. It's not like I didn't love those people. I made so many empty promises because I really meant it. I really meant it in the moment, but that addiction takes over. It just takes over.
That brings up an interesting question. For those of us who love someone suffering from substance use disorder, it's so hard because of those empty promises or of our constant worry and concern. And looking back on it now, like, what would you say to a family member who has someone who is currently struggling in active addiction?
It's so weird because it's so case by case. It's so different for everybody, but it's also that it's closely related. I now that I'm on an outside perspective, and I still have there are people that I care about that are still in addiction or that I have recently lost from addiction, and it's so weird because you want to save them, you want to save everybody, and you can't, and it's the hardest thing to do is have to watch somebody go through something knowing that you can't help them unless they want to help themselves.
Right. And, rock bottom, we can't even talk about that anymore because of death. Overdose deaths are so prevalent now, and fentanyl is being put in everything, including meth and all drugs. It's just such a precarious time. You mentioned that you've lost friends.
I lost somebody, one of my the closest person to me. He was like a little brother to me. He's damn near family, really. And he lost his battle last year, May 30th, and his birthday was the 25th. He would have been 21. And I spent all weekend with his mom, and we just kind of cried. And I just We had so many plans, you make so many plans, and he was really proud of me and everything that I'm doing, that I've been doing, and he just didn't make it. I really wanted him to make it really bad, and it's bittersweet because I'm doing good, and there are other people doing good, but you just want the people you care about to be one of those people too, and not everybody, unfortunately, makes it.
Of course. I'm so sorry for the loss of your best friend, your closest friend. I'm so sorry.
Yeah, that one really, really cut me deep. He sent a message out to all the people he cared about before, consciously or unconsciously, whatever the case may be. Only he knows really what happened that night. But, you know, he sent me a message and just said, I hope you know I love you. And that was the last thing.
I'm glad it was a message of love. You know, it's nice to have that, to hold on to that when we miss a person that, you know, we loved so much. So you went into rehab and it didn't work. And then you went into rehab and you went into rehab. It was like eight times. Is that correct?
Yeah, I tried so many times. But I think all the previous times I kept trying for the wrong reasons. Never had I ever tried for myself. I wanted to get sober for my sister. I wanted to get sober for my mom. I wanted to get sober for everyone but myself. Because if it was up to me, I wanted to still get high, and I was getting high. And I went to this luxurious rehab in California multiple times and going out there. And I was just like, well, maybe I'll just, I seen it as a vacation. I wasn't taking it seriously. I wasn't taking any of it seriously. So, I mean, that's the reason why I could never stay sober. And there were a few times where I felt like I was really in it. Even if I didn't start it for the right reason, I felt like once I was sober, I really, really wanted to. And I didn't do what I was supposed to do every time. There's always something that I wasn't doing.
But don't you think also some of these rehabs, they might be 30 days, and it takes a long time to recover from meth addiction. It takes a long time for the brain to heal.
You need to be in there a long time. The last place that I was a year-long program, and, you know, I think that a lot of different factors play into it, but I didn't stay the full year. I actually stayed 7 months. I was court-ordered there because I went to jail. I was court-ordered. This was right after the father of my nieces. He's really more like a brother to me too. He lived with me for 9 years and was with my sister. He was shot and murdered. So that one was really rough.
And that was over a drug exchange, yeah, or something, like he owed the drug dealer money or something like that.
Yeah, somebody owed him money, and he wasn't happy about it. Got into an altercation, and it was his friend, you know, it was his friend, air quotes, his friend that ended up shooting him over it. And I really ate myself up for a really long time about it because they were high on drugs that I sold them. So how could I not feel like absolute, like I thought it was my fault. I had to let it go and give it to God because it was eating me up really, really bad. And I couldn't get sober holding that type of hurt in my heart.
So you were basically sentenced to this. It was a choice, I suppose, jail or this year-long program. Is that how it worked?
I was in jail for 2 weeks, and they had made it to where I could get out and go to this program and do the thing. And, you know, I agreed and decided to go to it. And I beat my case 7 months into the program without finishing it. I left the program. Dumbest decision. I should have just stayed the rest of the time. I stayed. Actually, maybe I was only in the program for 6 months because I remember I stayed sober for about 2 months after I got out, and I relapsed. I relapsed, and I was getting high for about a month or so, maybe two or so months after I had relapsed. And then it was just like it all of a sudden hit me. Like I realized, like, this isn't what I want to do anymore. This isn't how I want to live my life. Like I had changed. I had lived such a different way. I never experienced the good life that I lived in those first few months of sobriety ever before. And I just knew then how good my life could be. And I went back and hung out with those same friends. You got to cut the friends out. You got to. I don't care how much you love them. You can't be around them because it's not a good environment for you. And I had to learn that the hard way. I went back and hung out with those friends and we got high together. You know, that's what we always did. And I think I needed that relapse to actually get my head straight because I just, I realized how crazy I was living. And every relapse, you get less and less. It's just not, it's not fun. It's never been fun, but it's just not
enjoyable. It's not enjoyable, right?
It's not. Once you have recovery in your brain, you're getting high is just, I mean, I live such a good life now. I'm so happy. I have my mental health on track. I'm genuinely happy, not from anything I have, any material possessions, anything like that, but like, I'm happy with myself. I like what I see when I look in the mirror. I feel confident and beautiful. And it's just something I wouldn't want to trade it for. Getting high would just is not an option.
Well, I have to say, you are wise beyond your years. I know you're only 23. And I think it's interesting when you talk about that, the honesty that you talk about it with. And also, I think being honest and being vulnerable, especially on social media, has almost been a ticket for you to maintain sobriety. Am I wrong on that?
The social media aspect of it has always blown my mind. It's blown my mind since day one. And, you know, people, I get hundreds of messages. I get hundreds of messages on multiple social media platforms. And I try to, as much as I can, respond to everybody and help people and do what I can. But it's always just been so shocking to me that, you know, so many people can relate to me. Not just, I knew that there's plenty of other people that can relate to the drug aspect of it, but I really thought, I didn't know that many people had false teeth either. I didn't know that young people my age were actually going through it. I really thought I was all alone.
So you mentioned the word dentures. We should talk about the fact, well, we all know that meth can rot your teeth and hurt your teeth. The meth destroyed your teeth?
It did. I think that was the main benefactor of it. Most definitely. I had bad genetics to begin with. My teeth were deteriorating pretty early on. And, you know, I've seen plenty of people that have used meth in their teeth that just nothing's wrong with them, you know, but I wasn't taking care of myself. I didn't care about myself when I was using. I didn't care about anything for that matter. And I just kept letting it go. And I went to the dentist many times throughout my addiction before I lost them all, before when it started just back here and I just needed a few fixed and I'd be fine. My teeth were, I had good looking teeth before these. I didn't have messed up teeth. I had a little crooked one right here, but I liked that because it added character to my smile. I liked that. And I lost them all. I just couldn't bring myself to go to the dentist and get it fixed. I couldn't be sober to do it. I didn't take care of myself. I was just on a fast pace slope to just nothingness. I didn't care about myself.
And then when you got sober, how much did it bother you? Were all your teeth gone at that point or pulled or what happened?
Oh my God. I can honestly tell you that the person you're speaking with today is not the same person as whenever I was first sober with no teeth. I can't tell you how much life having a smile has brought back into me, how much my character is shining through, how much I'm more ready and able to talk to people and hold a conversation and be able to smile in front of them is just crazy. I was very depressed. I was down in the dumps. I just didn't want to go out. I didn't want to do anything. I just didn't. And, you know, I was very afraid because I was like, well, what is dating going to be like for me? You know, I had like 6 teeth up here, 7 teeth down here. The rest were broken off in my gums and I was just looking crazy. I couldn't eat. You know, I was stressed out. I couldn't bite into anything. I was just, the depression really sunk in. And, you know, I would sit there and cry to my mom and she'd be like, baby, you need to go. You need to do it. You need to go in there and you need to do it. And at that point, I had no money. I had no way to get the teeth fixed because I was so sad. I wouldn't get a job. I couldn't bring myself to get a job, to talk to anybody to get a job. I didn't want anybody to see me. I was so embarrassed of myself and even more mad at myself for letting it get that far. I was just like, how did I get here? You know? And I finally went in for my free consultation and, you know, they told me what my options were, which was one option, which was take them all out and get some fake ones. So, I had the consultation. I found out about a grant that I was able to apply for through Quiver River Electric is who my mom goes through. And they have this little Roundup program set up to where you can apply, tell them what you need the grant for, and they can assist you. But, you know, I had to write a whole essay telling them why I need it and why I think I deserve it and stuff like that, and filled out the paperwork. And then I got $1,000. That was, my dentures altogether were $3,500. So I got $1,000, and I was like, okay, boom, that's enough to get the extraction. So I got my teeth pulled out like that. You know, I had all of the tops 1 week and the bottoms the next week, or I think it was the bottoms first, then the tops. And from then I felt good, but then reality sank in again. And I was like, well, now how do I get the money for the rest of it? So I was just stressed. And I remember making a Facebook post, and I was just like, I am so grateful. I shared about how I got the grant, and I was trying to share it with people. And I said, I'm so grateful, and I'm just sitting here, and I need prayers. I need guidance. I need someone to assist me and tell me what I should do. Just pray for me. Anything you can will help. And somebody that I'd been friends with for a while on Facebook actually reached out to me and inboxed me. And she said, just send me the number. I'll pay for it. Oh. And I don't know. I just started bawling my eyes out. I was crying. I said, this can't be real. And it was very much real. You know, I just told her, I said, there's no way. Like, what are you joking? And she's like, from St. Louis, she went through addiction, and she's a very successful business owner, you know, and she's a very sweet lady. Heidi, if you ever listen to this, she is amazing. And she told me the only thing that she expected in return was to get my ass over there and to see that smile. So she's pretty amazing.
Wow, that is really cool. The kindness of others sometimes can blow us away, especially when you've been through so much and you kind of lose your faith, I think, in other people, in yourself. And now I think what's kind of amazing is this, you not having teeth and taking the dentures out on TikTok or Instagram is what has garnered you like international. I mean, seriously, like national and international attention. Did you ever, like, what made you do that in the first place on social media? What made you take those dentures out and show the world?
I have no idea. I don't know. I remembered I was putting together this like little compilation video of my journey of from not having teeth to getting teeth. And I spent months on it. I was putting this video together, and I was like, because I'd seen a couple other different TikToks where people make compilation videos of, you know, just different things. And I was like, well, I think this would be a really cool story to share, you know, because, and I didn't know what was going to happen. You know, you think that nobody's going to see it anyways, or just make it. So I put that on there and shared my journey. And then it just got really crazy feedback, and it was just kind of blew up. And I was like, do people like this? And I just kind of really rolled with it. I was just like, well, I mean, I'm not going to hide it. There was many people that were like, well, why would you tell anyone? You know, nobody would have been able to tell in the first place if you never say anything. But why would I want to live like that? Why would I, if I want somebody to like me, I want them to like me for me, who I am, 100% or no percent, you know? So I'm just very open about it. I don't know. People ask me all the time how I am. I just don't know.
Yeah. And then I think you've also helped other people who maybe have been through similar struggles know that they're not alone. I don't know how many young people have dentures like you, but I bet that you have helped so many people through sharing your story.
There are tons of people. I speak to a lot of the people that send in messages to me. A lot of the times it'll be in my Instagram DMs, and it's all of those, and reply back to as many people as I can. And they're always shocked when I reply back too. They're like, oh my God, no way. I didn't know you would respond or ever see this. And I'm like, I'm really trying here to get to every single one of them, because I know that I would want somebody to be able to reach back out to me. So I really try to do the best I can.
Well, that's commendable. That's very commendable that you do that. What keeps you in recovery now? What stops you from using again?
I would say the thing that stops me from using is I feel like I've healed that void that I used to feel. I don't have that void in me that wants for something like that. I don't want to feel that way anymore. I just, I'd never been content before. I'd never been satisfied with myself. I was never okay. If I was sober, I didn't have all my stuff together. I didn't cut out the people from my life. I wasn't living an honest, good life. So now that I actually have done all the things that they tell you to do, that you need to do, I did self-reflection. I did not only change my drug addiction, I changed myself mentally, spiritually, physically, like 10 out of 10, all the notches. I had to go through the line and really reevaluate my choices and who I am as a person. Who am I? You know, I'd be like, who am I outside of drugs? Because after doing drugs for so long, that was my whole personality. I didn't know who I was without it. And I had to do this whole journey of just figuring out who I am as a person, what I like. Is this my favorite color? Or, you know, like what, you know, I had to figure myself out all over again. And it was kind of like a really awesome experience. And I'm still on it, you know, because you're never really done figuring out who you are until, you know.
Yeah. And you can always redefine and reinvent yourself. But I think you're right. Like the spiritual and psychological aspect of it, not looking outside yourself for that fulfillment, not looking outside yourself to drugs or material possessions or whatever it might be for the answers or fulfillment in your life, because it's never there.
Yeah, that's the truth. It's never. And it's so, I say it a lot, but it's just so weird to look at my past self from this perspective I have now and just to think like, wow, how I used to rationalize things was beyond any normal human experience. It was very abnormal. And to say that I thought it was very normal is just crazy to me now. It's just so crazy.
Well, I hope you continue to share your story and your journey with everyone, because I think you can reach so many young people, especially young people on TikTok. I'm on TikTok, but I'm kind of old for TikTok, but I just enjoy watching it. And Emily's Hope just got on TikTok too. So
really?
Yeah, we have like 13 followers now. So follow us on TikTok.
Yeah, I will.
So the charity just got on. Yeah. And I think we have a story to tell, and I think we can reach with between mental health and addiction. And I just think there's a lot of people out there that need help and need to know they're not alone.
Yeah. And I was one of those people. I you know, they say to go to meetings and stuff like that. And I would go to the meetings, but I always felt like I was still alone, even though I was surrounded by people, because I still had never met anybody that had fake teeth. I was just like, you know, I'm the only one. I don't know anybody. And I thank my lucky stars that I was able to find TikTok as an outlet to be able to create this super cool community of people that love and support each other. And it doesn't matter if you were never an addict or don't or have your natural teeth, you're still welcome to be in that loving community and supporting community where people are just not judgmental and we care about each other.
So do you ever get negative comments? I mean, I know when I went public with my daughter's story and what happened, I was just like bracing myself. And I would have to say like 98% of the people were so supportive and so kind and so caring. There was that 2% out there. And that's the negative always sticks in our brains, right? Like we can have a million compliments and it's that one, you know, person who says something nasty and mean, and the whole world seems to thrive on people being nasty and mean. And we know how much stigma there is when someone has substance use disorder. We know how much stigma there is around meth and meth users. You know, have you ever experienced that on social?
I think it's funny to say, I've noticed the comments defending me more than I've noticed the actual hateful comments. And I see comments like, I can't believe so-and-so said this. And it's weird because I have seen a lot, you know, there have been a lot of negative comments and stuff like that. But I don't allow those types of things to stick with me. You know, I use them as a lesson in myself, honestly, because me back then, I would be flying off the handle with everybody. I was unhinged. But now when I see people that, of course, I don't necessarily agree with and, you know, say hateful things, I just take it all with a grain of salt because I feel like they're not informed. They're what's that word? They're
ignorant?
Ignorant. Yeah. Negligent yeah. to the knowledge that they, I feel like if they had the knowledge, they wouldn't be saying those things, you know? Right. So I just.
I have to say you are wise beyond your years, because when I was 23, I was just getting into the TV business and we didn't even have social media. And when I would get negative comments, somebody would call or write in or something, that would stick with me. You know, I have to hand it to you at your age and with all of the notoriety around your life and your dentures and everything else. And are you going to keep taking your teeth off on social media? I mean, is that something you're going to continue to do, or will you stop that at some point?
I guess it's kind of like my brand, really. It's toothless and ruthless. Who am I with no toothless? You know, I have a whole brand surrounded by it. And I think it's just a fun way to let people know that, like, you just don't have to be afraid. You know, you just go out there, you do your thing. And at the end of the day, if only one person is there for you, that means the world, you know, that means the world to me. Even if I just had one supporter, I would still feel okay. It's all about having security within yourself and knowing who you are, being happy with who you are, and not letting outside instances affect what you have going on in here. You know,
exactly.
So I set those intentions every day. I tell people, set your intentions for the day. Just tell yourself, you know, I'm going to have a great day. It's going to be a great day. What a beautiful day to wake up, be alive, make my bed, you know, just remind yourself of all the things that you're grateful for. And I'm telling you, you'll forget the rest.
That is great advice, Faith Hill. And it has been such a pleasure to have you on the podcast. Thank you so much. And I'm going to keep watching you on Instagram and TikTok and keep it up, because I think you're doing a lot of people a lot of good.
Thank you. And thank you so much for having me on here. I listen to podcasts all the time, so I'll be waiting to hear this one.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to this latest episode of Grieving Out Loud. Connect with us online at emilieshope.foundation. And if you're enjoying the podcast, please consider giving us a positive review. Until next time, wishing you faith, hope, and courage.